Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We could leave any day and call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies feline with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
About 8 o'clock, the Astros were losing to the Guardians. We'll get into the disaster that was the final inning that the Guardians had to hit when they scored 6 runs. That was about 8 o'clock. And then about 10 minutes later, Shams tells us that KD is available. So you go from, man, that's rough. The no win to fold them Astros at it again. And then you get the news that KD is good to go. And that was the only good thing that happened last night. You found out your superstar was ready to play, and then after that point, it was more of the same from game one, just different.
He was ready to play the first quarter, first half.
Yes, he got off to a good start, but
5 for 6.
But KD's reemergence didn't change the tenor of the game, other than, hey, we got a guy who can knock down some shots, but he has to do it in a way that seems kind of difficult. Look, KD, even at his, it's relatively speaking, advanced age as far as a basketball player is concerned, is still one of the best bucket getters in basketball. But you see, there's nothing really easy about his game, other than because he's supremely talented. He makes it look that way. He's still trying to beat guys off the dribble and knock down the mid-range. He's not coming off a flare screen. He's not, no pin downs, none of that stuff where it feels easy for him. And the topic of the Rockets' offense in the last stretches of the season was, hey, they implemented a couple things, and the offense is flowing better, more player movement, more ball movement. That has seemed to disappear. Like, you could toss aside game one and say, well, KD wasn't out there. Game two seemed much like most of the Rockets' season, where everything's difficult. If they're not getting offensive rebounds, or the Lakers aren't turning the ball over, or long shots lead to runouts, they're pretty stuck in the mud. And that's why they don't break 100 again in a game two loss that now sees them down 0-2 to a Laker team who felt like, at least their approach publicly coming to the series, all the audio we heard was about, hey, we're just going to go out there and give it our best. There wasn't a sense, and maybe they were just doing the rope-a-dope. There wasn't a sense coming from them that this was a real opportunity to win a series. This was just, hey, man, we know our guys are out. We're just going to give it a go and see what happens. And boy, have they. We had the Luke Kennard game kind of again, but certainly in game one. But he shot the ball well in game two. And then Marcus Smart, he knocked down threes early in the first quarter. And we're like, okay, it's going to be one of those. This is the guy tonight who we're going to have to deal with. And the Friday before the series started, Sean and I kind of talked about who would be the most annoying Laker to have good nights against the Rockets. Luke Kennard was the number one draft pick in that regard because of his ability to shoot the basketball. And certainly he has done enough to maintain that number one spot. But Marcus Smart did his thing. I mean, we've seen Jackson Hayes D up Alper Şengün, which may say more about Alper Şengün than Jackson Hayes. We had DeAndre Ayton in game one have his moments. All around, we're two games into a series where the Rockets were the heavy favorite. They're playing a Lakers team where all the conversations were about what could 41-year-old LeBron do. And LeBron had his moments last night. He continues through two games to be the best player for both teams as far as controlling the game, his impact on the game, even at a more advanced age than Kevin Durant. And now with several days to contemplate because they don't play till Friday, if you thought the gap between game one and two is bad as far as the conversation about questioning everything the Rockets are made of, it's going to be even worse. And the problem is they're playing the Lakers. So everyone's going to have an opinion. If this was Rockets versus even the Timberwolves, there would be so much less attention. Stephen A. Smith, Kendrick Perkins, who have all had their comments. Kendrick Perkins took the Rockets of heart one more time. They would have things to say. But okay, you're playing the Timberwolves. How much juice can you get out of Rockets, Wolves, and the Rockets disappointing against the Wolves? And it would be far less. It would be a far different scenario because the Wolves have all their guys. In fact, if you think about it, a lot of people would probably take the Wolves in that series, even with the Rockets being the higher seed, if it came down to that. This version of what's going on, where the Lakers are the team everyone wants to talk about, you have LeBron everyone wants to talk about, you got Kevin Durant on the other side, all of the energy is pointed at how bad the Rockets are. And you're going to have to deal with that for the next 2 days, how you're dealing with it locally. If you decide, hey, I kind of want to get away from this, don't turn on national television. Don't turn on any national sports conversation because the Rockets are the target for, hey, you know who's bad at what they do? The Rockets. And you have different versions of it's Ime's fault, it's Rafael Stone's fault, it's Alper Şengün's fault. Amen Thompson's been able to avoid scrutiny. The Kennard thing in game one, he took you know, responsibility. But Amen Thompson seems to have avoided the slander. The biggest targets, how would you rank them, Sean? I see the calls, Billy and Eric. Eric, did you tell the intern your name was Eric Bieniemy and they don't know who that is, so they called you Eric the Enemy, or did you call in as Eric the Enemy? I'll find out when we get you on. But how would you rank the targets for the Rockets? Because Rafael Stone got the Boogie Cousins mention. Ime's taking it. Alpi's taking it. Kevin Durant in some ways because he turns the ball over 9 times and his return is getting it. Not our rankings of blame pie, but from what you've seen.
National
who's
blame
pie. Who's the biggest target? Who's number one on this is all your fault?
I think it's definitely between two guys. Şengün, Ime Udoka. I think it's in that order. I think it's Şengün 1, Ime Udoka 2. But it also, I think it kind of just depends on, like, where you are in the conversation because they both catch it. You know, it's just like whichever guy you want to bring up first.
Yeah.
There's really no case to be made for one or over the other because it can just be, well, you know, if it's Şengün, Şengün needs to get put in better spots. Well, he needs to make a freaking layup. He needs to be able to score over DeAndre Ayton.
Watching him get stonewalled by Jackson Hayes is just, come on.
Yeah.
Jackson Hayes is barely hanging on to us. He's playing because they got no one else. They've tried to make acquisitions the last couple seasons to make him less important. He's getting minutes, and he's having moments against you. He's flexing when he's making plays. He's flexing when the ball bounces off Kevin Durant's hand when they're battling for a rebound. He's like, ugh! It's like, wait a minute. Look,
yeah.
Kevin Durant not known for battling in the paint, but Jackson Hayes wins the battle because it bounced off KD's hands and he's flexing. Jackson Hayes, now that I think about it, shooting up the rankings of most annoying Lakers. He's just not doing enough to really hold that spot.
Yeah, it's just annoying that he hasn't been like unplayable.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The fact the Rockets the haven't Rockets made him unplayable.
Alper Şengün can't play Jackson Hayes off the court.
Can't play anyone off the court.
That's true, but still.
He can play himself off the court.
No, well, they don't have any other options.
That is true.
So he has to play, but yeah.
In other news, Clint Capela had a stint in the first half and got benched for the second half.
He can join Reed Shepard, who played 11 minutes, and people are upset about that. But I talked about it in the first show. We can certainly get into it. Shepard's not at a point where he can't shoot the ball poorly to begin a game and then make mental mistakes on defense and get minutes. He's I don't know if it's an E-mate thing or an entire staff thing. They don't view him in a way where he can get away with those things and still get minutes to try to shoot himself out of a bad start.
Yeah. In fairness, Aaron Holiday is held to the same standard.
That's true. He didn't play a lot. He credit to Aaron Holiday. Credit to him for getting up three threes in like 7 minutes.
Like,
that's impressive.
And credit to Ime Udoka for being like, okay.
That's enough. Come on.
I want to play you.
Look.
Obviously, I want to play you. But
we have two guys who are pseudo point guards on the roster, and both of you I don't want to see on the floor anymore. That's what's happened. That's what happened last night in the 101-94 loss to the Rockets, yeah. To the Lakers, which sees the Rockets as now in an 0-2 deficit. A lot of questions will be asked. We've got several people talking about this team in a negative light. We'll hear from Brian Windhorst when we come back. He wasn't thrilled with them. Called it, I think he said, unacceptable. I don't know if he used the word disgusting. He might have. We'll hear from him when we come back. We'll get to Eric the Enemy. And we'll also hear from Billy, who wants to talk about Ime Udoka. So plenty of Rockets to get to. I mean, the Astros catching breaks here because you lose in the way that they did to the Cleveland Guardians on a Wednesday night or Tuesday night, whatever. We know you're not good.
Starts at like 5 o'clock, yeah, weirdly.
Big deal. You lose, okay. We move on. The Rockets immediately followed, and we got that result. Late night disaster in L.A. for the Rockets. So more Rockets to discuss. We had some injury news in the NBA to get to as well. Big star. And it always happens. Kevin Durant was the first big name to miss a game. We seem well on our way to another. The unanimous, first time ever, I believe, unanimous Defensive Player of the Year may be out for several games. We'll get to that at some point. So a lot of basketball to get to, your calls as well. Join us if you'd like. 713-780-3776 is the number. Me and Sean, till noon, we will be back.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building there.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
We got a couple of people who want to join us to talk about the Rockets and other things. Let's get to Eric first. He wants to talk about the Rockets and Yordan. What's up, Eric?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing? Yeah, all these clowns that thought that the KD trade was good, they can clown this right now. And then getting Ime as the head coach after he cheated on Neil Long. Yeah, it's not working out. And look how it worked out for the Celtics after they got rid of him. And also all these other clowns are crying about trading Yordan. They should trade him. He's going to get paid, what, $29 million next year? So if they're doing pretty bad, you know, get rid of him before he gets injured. And, who has a better chance of going further? Man U winning the Premier League or the Rockets beating the Lakers? I hang up and listen.
So let Eric, if you don't know about him, he has consistently been on, they never should have made that trade. Well, I don't know that what's going to happen tonight between the Suns or the Thunder is going to help your thoughts. Maybe Jalen Green has a big game. Maybe Dylan Brooks does, now that he has stated he wants to ISO on Shea. Not on the defensive end. He wants to on the offensive end, he wants to ISO on Shea. So we'll see how that goes for him. Yeah, after a game like that, it's tough to be in support of anything the Rockets do, but I'm still not siding with you with the Kevin Durant trade because I've seen Jalen Green in the playoff series. Now, for 8 games, it has been atrocious except for one. But he does love a game two. Maybe game two he will respond with the big performance against OKC for the Suns. But 7 out of 8 games, Jalen Green has been not so great. And to be honest, whatever you think this young core is, 7 out of 8 times we've seen them in a playoff game, it's been underwhelming. Like, there have been moments. Jabari will have his moments. Apparently, Jabari has the greenest of lights. He just shoots, shoots whenever he wants.
Yeah, like, again, not specifically Reed Shepard, but, like, Reed Shepard misses two shots, sit down for the rest of the night.
Aaron, like, Holiday, you come sit next to
Jabari Smith, yeah.
But Jabari is not a...
Keep going.
He fits into the mold of what you would say is a two-way player, although the offense can have his ebbs and flows.
Mm.
The playoffs, if we watch the best teams, a bunch of two-way guys, and there's no one to really... If you are a target on defense, teams will expose you. We heard Jaden McDaniels talk about it. Everyone in the Nuggets is a target, so we'll see how they respond. But
what's the second way for Jabari Smith?
Defensively.
Oh, okay. So offense is the first
one? No, the second way would be offense.
I want to know what two ways of the court he's playing.
He plays defensively. That's okay. His calling card, and he was supposed to be a guy who could be a two-way wing, a two-way big wing, and right now he is a guy who loves to get up shots. Mm. There are no questions about Jabari's lights when it comes to shooting the basketball. You know, scoring in the mid-teens is kind of where he is, and he did it again last night. Not so efficient, but we've come to expect that. He is who he is at this point. This point, it's
proven otherwise. At least he's shutting down.
Well, he didn't have to guard Luke Kennard. Not always.
Yeah, but is he guarding LeBron? No, he's not guarding LeBron. Is he guarding?
There's some Rui he's on, some Marcus Smart.
Smart.
Look.
like who's the Laker having a bad night that we can credit Jabari?
I don't know that Jabari, you'd say, well, we know Amin's their point of attack. We need you to go after a guy. They put Amin on guys. Jabari's he's had a couple block shots. Look, I'm not going to use what happened over the first two games to call Jabari Smith a bad defender. He may not be a lockdown defender, but he is not someone you can just go, oh, we'll target him.
He feels
possession after possession
very underwhelming on both sides of the two-way player for a guy who gets 40 minutes, no questions asked every night.
There isn't enough negatives, I guess, in that staff's eyes to pull him off the floor. Because I guess you would say, who's the better option? Who's your better option? Yeah, man, you're supposed to be a team full of wings that can play, but are you throwing Tar Eason out there from? More minutes than Jabari? Yeah, so, I mean, you're not taking Jabari Smith off the floor. And look, they only gave up 101 points, so it's not like it was just everyone's getting toasted. Yeah, yes, Marcus Smart knocking down open jumpers pisses you off because it's Marcus Smart. But is that Jabari or is that mental mistakes all around leading to those? Or a disrespect for Marcus Smart? Go on. Like, Luka had that wave of Alpi when he tried to make that move. Like, Luka was sitting on the bench. He has this dismissive wave of Alpi. Okay, buddy, go ahead. Maybe that's just the approach the Rockets have had with Marcus Smart. And in game one, understood. Game two, he should have probably figured it out once he knocked down a couple shots early that you may need to pay more attention to him.
Yeah.
What else did he get to?
Yordan Alvarez. Call 3-6.
Yeah,
that's more of a Brandon take.
I don't mind if I haven't made that comment. That's a 7-10 and 3-6 take. Because Lance, like, make a move right now. I would understand, but it wouldn't be about the money they're paying. I mean, it would be about keeping them around while this team could be bad and trying to recoup some value back. But it's not about the $29 million he's making.
I saw something this weekend, and it might be outdated stats. That Yordan Alvarez is on pace for a 70 home run season, and the Astros are on pace for a 60 win season. Again, that might not reflect the current moment, because I think the Astros has won one game since that tweet on like Saturday has been fired off. So that's not great. That's not great. Your best player having more home runs than on pace to have wins.
So that would be a reason if you're looking to say, hey. Let's trade him now. Try to find a way to set a path for the future. You have to hit on the guys you're getting back, not because he's making nearly $30 million.
Is Dana Brown going to be the guy to
always? I said
push that button.
If he is the lame duck that he seems to be, maybe you wait until you make a decision for your next GM. If that's going to come about before you trade Yordan, allow the guy you're putting your faith in. To shepherd this team into their next era to make that move, if a move is going to be made. Let's get to Ray. I see you. I saw you calling. We'll get to you, but let's get to Billy first. Billy wants to talk about Ime. What's up, Billy?
Hey, guys. Great show. I was going to piggyback off of Eric a little bit. I mean, the Celtics clearly got better and improved, especially offensively when Udoka left. And what's really bothering me about Udoka is they've been double-teaming Durant the whole year, and he has still not figured it out. I mean, that's – I don't know if it's lack of preparation, lack of knowledge of how to do things offensively. I mean, I can't believe an NBA coach would be that terrible at that. But this is unacceptable, and they cannot keep him as head coach. This is not going to improve with an old Fred VanVleet coming in next year. They're going to have to make major changes. It's time to really get serious about getting Giannis in here and getting a superstar and making this work. Get a new coach, get a new GM, and let's go. Thanks.
Thanks, Billy. So this conversation came up after the last time the Lakers did this, back in that two-game set that they had. And Ime kind of brushed it off, saying, yes, it was bad in that fourth quarter, but the numbers tell us that we have handled that type of situation, the doubles of Kevin Durant, well. It just didn't show itself in the fourth quarter, which – you would say. So in the most important time of a game, whatever numbers you saw didn't correlate to actual performance when it mattered most. So you were speculating on him not being able to figure it out. From his attitude publicly, he didn't think it was that big of a problem. We'll see if that's just him being Ime, front-facing, not going to admit to anything, not going to admit that the Lakers got him on that one. But he didn't seem like a guy who was that bothered by it, didn't believe it was an issue. And then we see last night that not only did they double Durant to a point where he barely got shots off, Durant said it happened from the start of the game, but we saw it become a bigger deal in the second half, but it resulted in 9 turnovers. There are some systematic issues with this team when it comes to how you handle those things, because who are the outlets? The right basketball play, one of the right basketball plays last night in the midst of that fourth quarter, Kevin Durant had 2 men on him. He dribbles, and he has a couple options. He can either throw it to the corner to a wide-open Amen Thompson or try to get the ball to Alperen Şengün as Marcus Smart is recovering. He chooses Alperen Şengün. Marcus Smart recovers, deflects the ball away. The right basketball play is to throw that ball to the wide open player in the corner. But what's the result if you throw a Amen Thompson? The Lakers aren't going to recover to him. They're going to go, hey, shoot the basketball. We're better off. In fact, you are doing what we want you to do. The person who's least threatening to us is that guy in the corner who has no confidence in his shot. And if he does shoot it, it's a second thought. And we'll take the results, which we believe will be a miss. Now we have to go get the defensive rebound, which is a problem when you play the Rockets. So those are the problems they have. Who are the spacers? And Kevin Durant was supposed to be, and he is, one of the more malleable superstars. You just drop him in. He'll go get his. You don't have to change very much to allow him to succeed. But that's a regular season problem or solution. When the playoffs hit and teams will have specific game plans for you, him, your scheme, and the players around him, what are your answers? What are your adjustments? I don't know what the adjustment is when you have shooters who you can't depend on, and the one guy who you would say could be a knockdown shooter did wind up shooting nearly 40% from the floor. You have a belief that if he's not shooting the ball well, he's a net negative, so you'll pull him off the floor almost immediately every time you see a mistake, and that's Reed Shepherd. So they're not built great, but this is us talking after the fact. Going into the year, there weren't, you know, I talked about maybe getting another shooter, maybe another ball handler, but we weren't having these major conversations about Rafael Stone not building the roster the right way, not having enough around Kevin Durant. And Stephen Adams was still active at the time. We're kind of, a lot of people hand-waving. Hey, Kevin Durant was dropped in on the team and won 52 games. They got rid of Jalen Green, who struggled in the playoffs. Dylan Brooks, okay, cool, whatever, good player. But you got Kevin Durant. The conversations about how they're built are because of what we've seen during the season. And maybe that's the right way to approach it. But going into the year, good build. Now, when the Lakers, without Austin Reeves and Luka, are putting it to you and have double-digit leads in both games, the questions are starting. And that's what these next 2 days are going to be about until they can prove otherwise. Who's at fault? Who do we blame? You heard Billy point the blame at Ime and Rafael Stone.
Yeah. It's not great for old Ime Udoka. It's not great.
Nah.
Not, it hasn't been, I'd say, a great showing that one coach loses his two best players and, like, makes Luke Kennard and Marcus Smart work. And Ime Udoka's had 84 games and just, like,
figure it out.
There's just no guards. Like, just Reed Sheppard just can't make this guy work.
J.J. Redick, the, hey, you did a podcast with LeBron. You want this job?
Yeah. Like, think about the conversation. We're talking about going back in time to, like, October for how this team was built. Go back, whatever, 2 years ago when J.J. Redick got hired and how everyone's just like, oh, so a guy who friends with LeBron gets to be the coach? Cool. Good luck with that, Lakers.
And Ime went through the Spurs system, got a job.
Spurs system.
Coach with the Nets for a year. Got, I believe, for a year, maybe two. And then got the Boston job and made a finals. We forget that. It was the first year made a finals, but it was a team ready, set with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And then 2 years later, they won a title.
By the way, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, they drove this guy to the finals.
Oh, now,
legacy added. They took Ime Udoka to the finals.
So we go from, wow, look at what Ime did. Finally got this team over the hump.
They
dragged his alleged incompetence to the finals. Now the flip here. And then when they got an actual coach, a couple years later, they won the title.
I mean, it's just that, like, Ime is a defensive coach, and so their entire roster was defensive players. So he could coach a good defense with that. He can't coach a good defense if he doesn't have at least four good defensive players on the court at all times.
So are you a defensive coach if you need excellent defenders at every spot to make your defense work?
I mean, not if they're soft. What if they're bitches? They're playing like a bitch right now.
What Sean is doing, we speculated as the previous show was ending, does everyone on the Rockets roster get called the P word or a bitch at some point, no matter what just game it is?
Inner monologue for 48 minutes.
I mean, he'll call a ref that vocal audibly.
Yeah.
But at some point in his head, depending on the situation, does everyone catch it at least once? That whole thing. Men think about sex so often every day. Does Ime Udoka calls one of his players a bitch
every single game? All 10 guys that play, they all catch one.
I mean, not Jayshon because he challenged LeBron and looked how well that went.
The 10th man on the team, who played in to start the second quarter with the 9th man, Aaron Holiday.
Yeah,
great stuff, Ime.
And all that guy did was push LeBron to knock it down a couple threes in a row. Let's get to Ray, and then we'll go to break. Pena, I see you. We'll get to you. But let's get to Ray. He's held for a bit. What's up, Ray?
Hey, how's it going, man? Appreciate y'all bringing me on. A couple of things. You know, like, I know KD's getting a lot of the flack, but when's LP going to let his nuts hang and play some real ball? You know, and I think the free throws was kind of the difference in the game. They went 22 of 28 from the line, and then, you know, if those guys from the bench can make just a couple of shots, you know, we win the game, but we probably barely win, but it's a win, right?
Yeah, there's some small margins here. From as much as we're taking them apart because they lost, mostly because of who they lost to as far as the other players on the Lakers roster, there are things that you feel like can get corrected, except we've seen these things be a problem all year long. So Kevin Durant talked about it after the game. Hey, we beat them in this category. We beat them in this category, but they made six more threes than us. Yes, the math says you make a couple more shots, you're in this game. But we were doing this after game one. And the problems that Kevin Durant and this offense has when a simple double is thrown at them has been a thing all year. So do I think you're going to fix it in between today or last night and Friday? No, I have no faith that that'll be a fix. And so far, Kevin Durant has shown that doubles affect him to the point, particularly against the Lakers, to the point of 9 and what was the last time? 8 turnovers. So, yeah, you're right, Ray. A couple things. You knock down a couple more shots. You keep them off the free throw line. But, hey, the Lakers have gotten an excellent whistle for the entirety of that franchise's existence, particularly now with LeBron and Luka in the mix.
I was wondering how long you're going to go back.
Yeah, you wonder how long those go. Since George Mikan, Sean.
Okay.
Since George Mikan.
Since they left Minneapolis.
Yes, they have gotten a great whistle. That's not going to stop now.
No.
So get used to that. If this series goes a long, long way, get used to being frustrated, particularly if Austin Reeves comes back.
Yeah.
He's already doing the one-on-one stuff. I would imagine by Friday he's doing three-on-three, which would mean you may see him in a game five back in L.A.
I think Reeves is the guy who comes back.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a Shams thing where he's like, the Lakers aren't anticipating Luka in round one.
Yeah.
Like, just kind of flatly. So it looks like Reeves is more on track, which, I mean, you see what Kennard's doing. Hey, imagine that was a better player. Still defensive liability, though. So, Ime, attack the defensive liability. You know how your defensive liabilities can't play, but theirs can?
The problem is...
Why is that?
Well, the problem is... I don't know that a lot of Rockets can be trusted to dribble.
Yeah.
So how do you attack... And someone brought it up how dribbling is an underrated skill in the NBA today because of how much pressure playoff defenses will put on a ball handler. And we've seen it. With the Rockets, how many guys do you trust to dribble when pressure defense is the play for the opponent right now?
I mean,
the answer is zero.
Can't get them posted up on somebody? Like, you can't get Kennard posted on somebody? Like, just whoever Kennard starts the possession on.
Who would you trust to post up besides Kevin Durant?
Well, Shagoon with Kennard on him.
I'm sure the Lakers would just allow that to happen.
I forgot. Their coach can coach,
yeah,
and
yeah,
ours can't.
Yeah.
Ours lets the game get dictated to him.
Yeah, I think JJ would find a way. Oh, you're trying to get Kennard on Shingun in the post? I'll find a way around that.
Yeah.
I'll just bring it. I would actually find it interesting to try to watch Alpi pass out of a hard double. If they brought over whatever bigs on the floor, let's see him pass out of a hard double.
To Ray's point, you really shouldn't be doing the Lakers shot 50% and 48% from three of the first two games. That's going to come down. It's like, that's really all you got for, like, what can go right for the Rockets. Or they remember how they ran the offense the last nine games of the season. Just, like, the style in which they ran it, where they had, like, their top 10 in passes per game. And not so much. They're going back to the old me. With Kevin Durant. Yeah, you know how we were embarrassed in March with how Kevin Durant couldn't handle a double team? Actually, against these guys. Yeah. What if we just made that the offense again? Against these guys again?
Ah, the good old days of late March where we thought the offense was fixed. Nah. Let's go to break. Payne, thanks for the call, Ray. Anyone else want to join us? 713-780-3776. I will tell you this, Ray. John Granato, after game one, said, there's no way the Lakers are going to shoot 60% from the floor, and no way the Rockets will shoot as poorly as they did. He was right on both counts. Didn't matter. They still lost the game, even with Kevin Durant coming back. In fact, they scored less points in game two than they did in game one, despite all those things flipping a bit.
Played better defense, though. Six less points for the Lakers.
Less Reece Shepard on the floor. He played 30-something minutes in game one, only 11. Better defense. Better defense. Ime's right. You're wrong, Sean. Let's
six
go.
Points. Six points of 20 minutes. That's
six
not a good
points game. Better. Just think if he was on the floor, how many more points the Lakers would have scored.
Yeah, I mean, if you just didn't play him at all, that's, you know. Well,
don't think that might not come up at some point.
That's like 3 points, so you still lost 98 to 94.
I wouldn't rule out a DMP at some point if he doesn't shoot. If he feels like he's not going to shoot the ball well, don't rule out a DMP. Peña will get to you when we come back.
Houston's independent voice for sports talk.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
So Peña called this morning, but John and Lance were being John and Lance. They didn't get to him about the NFL draft. We'll see if that's what he wants to talk about, because Sean and I were talking about Nick Caserio could do all of us a big favor tomorrow night. Yeah, it's here. The draft is tomorrow night. We'll see. We'll talk about
just
that.
Just get the vibes up, Caserio.
Yeah.
Pick someone we can play in fantasy.
Yeah, we'll talk about that, but let's get to Pena first. What's up, Pena?
Hey, good morning, Dale. Yeah, I do want to talk about the NFL draft, and I took a peek at Lance Zierlein's 4.0 mock draft. And he has the Texans trading now from the 28th pick to the Jets to the second round. And if that were the case, what do you think they'll be doing in the second round? Thank you. Have a great day.
Lance. Well, that is a likely scenario with Nick Caserio. Could make a trade out of the first round because that's what we're looking for. Yeah, he has them trading, as he mentioned, with the Jets.
I think basically down to 33.
Yeah, so 32 would be the Seahawks taking Jadarian Price in his mock. So there goes one of our dreams off the board, Sean, in Lance's eyes. At 33, I'm looking at, I don't see Casey. Nope, he got picked at 19. So, yeah. So some of the dreams we've had are being crushed by Lance's mock draft.
Yep. Sadiq, 15.
Yeah, earlier than the Texans could grab him. What do I see the Texans doing? If they're trading out of the first round, there's some speculation this morning. I was listening to a podcast about them maybe still looking for a tackle. I was trying to figure out where that tackle would play when you have Ursary and then you signed Wyatt Teller to play guard along with Ed Ingram and then you have Braden Smith. That's a very expensive swing tackle of Braden Smith's not starting at tackle for you. So I was wondering where that podcast is getting it. Maybe they're not as in tune with the Texans as I need to be to do this job. I could see a center. Jake Slaughter is a guy that's been mentioned quite a bit.
God, not at 33.
What's their second? What's their actual second round pick? Is it 30?
30. They have 39 in, so, I think, one of the 50s.
So what's the difference? 33, 39, what's the difference?
Well, 39 is not theirs either, but it's...
Yeah, it's someone else's.
It's one that they currently hold, not the hypothetical.
Yeah, so 39, 33, if they happen to trade into the second round. Could be a center, which I didn't see.
Oh, they have 59.
59, well. And then this proposed trade, they'd have 33.
Yeah.
So, or Jacob Rodriguez, the Texans have four linebackers who are all on the final year of their deal. Maybe there's an extension coming from Azeez Ostrier. It's a position that they have not paid that much attention to as far as resources thrown their way, other than signing Azeez in free agency. So I could see a Jacob Rodriguez as your linebacker of the present and the future being a guy they draft at that spot. He off-ball linebackers probably start going around there. Maybe Anthony Hill. Maybe that would likely make some of you happy who love a Texas guy. But I could see if they trade back into the second round, I could see it there.
Yeah.
Because that now you have your multiple second rounders, you use one on an off-ball linebacker.
I mean, Nick Caceres already told us what he's going to do. Best player available, baby. That's what you can expect, whoever the best player is.
See, Pena, I could have done that. I'm not sure how rewarding that would have been for best you to call in and just say, hey, whoever's on the board, that's BPA.
That's what Caceres said, on their board. That we don't know.
Yeah, sure, but I can't really go, hey, you heard what Nick Caserio said. Why are you asking me?
Best player it's available. Not, he already told you
it's
guys.
It's not great for what we do here. If he calls, then I go,
best player available.
Nick Caserio's already told you what's going to happen, BPA.
And only Nick Caserio and, I don't know, probably 10 other people, they know who that would be for the Houston Texans. But, yeah,
so best Pena, player if in
Jake
our,
Slaughter.
If, oof,
they have a 1-1.
Oof. In our
there's
eyes,
a lot of people listening that maybe didn't listen to earlier this week. Yesterday.
Yeah, Jake Slaughter is a center for the, well, formerly of the Florida Gators, who Lance doesn't think very highly of.
No.
But Tony Pauline, another one of the NFL insiders, says that the Texans could be targeting on day two. Lance projects him as a fourth-round pick, despite saying he is an average backup / special teamer. He just thinks he'll go higher than where he has him slot as far as a grade.
Mel Kiper loves him.
But also thinks he's just a fourth rounder. Tony Pauline is telling you the Texans would draft him at minimum a round early,
yeah,
according to some others, or maybe two rounds early.
And so that's become
the bit here.
That Jake Slaughter is going to be the number one pick. In their mind, it's Slaughter than Mendoza.
It seems like they could get him at if they make the trade down. So maybe they already have that plan because they know he won't. They don't have to worry about someone snaking them if they trade out of the first round.
Trade out Friday too and probably get them. like, of course.
That's, I guess, possible. We will see how the rest of the NFL think what they think of Jake Slaughter, who could be your center of the future.
Might hear his name called tomorrow, though.
It's a real, real Al Davis move if they take
our board's our board.
If they take,
we
Jake
stand
Slaughter.
By our evaluation.
Like we don't.
Who would we be if we didn't stand by? Our evaluation?
We don't think we could get him. We didn't have a trade that could get us out of the spot. We don't think we could get him at. What, 59?
So. 33? Can't let someone snake him. 36?
Well, that's Lance's thought that they'll be able to make the trade. We don't know if they'll be able to make that trade into early second round status.
Thank you, Nick Caserio, for giving me something to chuckle at.
Yeah, but the hope is that he does something. The board falls a certain way where they can give us something to be excited about, whether it is a receiver or a tight end or even I would – love the playmaking linebacker from Tech. Maybe that would be a little higher than they'd like to take a linebacker, but I wouldn't be against it.
Like we were half joking, but a little serious. I'm like, hey, come on, just bounce on the handlebars. Let's get a little crazy. Draft someone like, again, if you pick them at 39, no one cares. But if you pick them at 28, it's a little too early. It's like, just pick them. Okay, sure, trade back, get more picks. But I don't know. I do think there does – everyone – like, it's always a smart move analytically to trade down. Like, every time a team trades down, that like they get points with the judges. Two
– a draft Nick gets his
it's just
wings.
Like, it's just like if I were a GM in an NFL team and the only thing I cared about was getting – Twitter GMs to think I'm doing a good job, I'd trade back every year and never draft a running back in the first two rounds. That's all I would do. That is like how you get pats on your back.
If you're Nick Caserio, you don't allow those people to tell you don't play to those people because they were against you trading and getting Will Anderson.
Yes.
So you made that move against type because everyone thought you're going to suck anyway. So why are you giving up a future top five pick to get up and trade Will Anderson? They did it. It worked out. And now Will Anderson's the highest paid non-quarterback ever.
And they've traded out of the first round every year since.
I mean,
up for it.
You got an elite player. You got an elite player. But
yeah, no,
we've got enough of those.
Sure. His parents can retire a little bit early.
But
now.
Look, you can find your secondary guys later. They've proven they can do that. Offensive line in the first round hasn't worked out. So maybe in second round hasn't worked out. Ursary is the one exception so far. So there are certain spots, as we know, that are black holes, that are blind spots. There are certain ones that they know type and how those guys will fit. I hope for a splash. That's all.
Yeah.
A touchdown maker, if it is a running back or a receiver. KC Concepcion would be great if he's available, even though they did invest in that position last season. All right, we'll go to break. We got an hour to go. If you want to join us to talk the draft, you want to talk more Rockets, we will talk progressively about the Astros because they do play. They didn't play well in the late innings.
They play in like an hour.
Another
early one too.
Well, that benefits all of us. Get it out of the way. If they win, you got a great afternoon and evening. And if they don't win, have maybe a late lunch or allow it to sit for a little bit, then have your dinner and enjoy the rest of the night. We'll also play some sound, which will have me ask a question. In fact, I'll get Sean prepared for it right now. Considering the tone of Mike Vrabel's comments and if you watched it, you saw what he was projecting as, you know, sad boy type energy. When's the next time Mike Vrabel laughs in public before everyone go, oh, you're laughing, huh? You know what else is funny? When can he become a regular old Mike Vrabel again? We'll play that audio of him not saying it all out loud, but saying what we all thought was the case when we first saw those photos with him and Diana Rossini. Tough conversations apparently had at home. So the question for you and everyone, when's the next time he can make a joke without anyone going, oh, okay, things are funny now, huh? We'll do that at some point in the second hour. We will be back.
ESPN 97.5.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.